I'm Bill Castle, and this is Free Expression. This program is all about conveying the Christian message from a Catholic point of view and defending the liberty which makes it possible to do that. We talk with creative, interesting people examining the attitudes of the young and developing new approaches to Catholic higher education. Join us, sit back, and enjoy some free expression. Much from the beginning of time, older folks have complained that the young generation is morally confused. You can remember Paul Lynde in the musical Bye Bye Birdie singing What's the Matter with Kids Today? But some recent research gives new credibility to this ageless complaint of parents. The Evangelical Summit Ministries and polling firm McLaughlin & Associates conducted a survey that suggests we've reached some kind of moral tipping point. According to that poll, 55% of Americans aged 18 to 29 now believe that there's no such thing as truth. My guest is Dr. Jeff Myers, president of Summit Ministries. Dr. Myers, this is a pretty disturbing finding here. Please tell us how you arrived at this very startling insight.
Well, Bill, let me give you a little insight into why we did the survey to begin with. Of course, McLaughlin Group is a well-respected pollster. And we were trying to figure out what's the pulse of people when it comes to truth. You know, it used to be the case that people would say, yes, there is such a thing as absolute truth. And then along came the idea that, well, you don't seek the truth, you speak your truth. In other words, truth is not something that exists independent of us that we can find, but it's something that each person develops personally for themselves. Well, then that affects every other area of life. You no longer believe, for example, in the sanctity of life because, you know, it would depend on whether you feel good about that or not. So we've been watching this trend toward younger adults moving more toward the idea that truth is personal and up to each individual. And we found in this survey that we have now officially crossed the tipping point, so to speak, where more young people than not essentially say in our surveys, reality doesn't really exist independent of me. I make up my own reality.
This not only does it affect their attitudes about the large moral questions, but I would think it also affects their relationships. If there's no truth, then is there loyalty? Is there honesty between people who are supposed to be friends or married partners? Or this is pretty wide-ranging implication.
You're exactly right. You've hit the nail on the head. In fact, it may even be worse than that. What is language? If words do not refer to ideas or things, then when we talk, what is it that we're even talking about? If I say, for instance, the words I use mean whatever I want them to mean, why would I expect that sentence to make sense to anyone else? Because the words mean whatever they want them to mean. So even things like communication become impossible in a world where there's no truth. But at the deepest level, for young adults, we're seeing this reflected in their sense of despair about life. 75% of young adults now say they do not have a sense of purpose that gives them meaning in life. 53% say they regularly struggle with anxiety and depression. And you can easily imagine why that's so. I live in Colorado. If you go out in the wilderness without a topographical map and a compass, you can very quickly get lost. But even if you have a compass, you could still get lost if you think that the whole point of having a compass is that the red needle should point toward you. And that's what people are essentially saying. I am the one who decides truth. So I'm not on the lookout to find what is actually so, what reality really consists of, and then conform to it. Rather, I am going to make up my own way. And, of course, people are just more lost than ever.
One of the great trends that we find addressed in the media frequently is this phenomenon of the so-called nuns, those people who have no religious identity and who rarely, if ever, go to church. if people have so detached themselves from what has always been the great conduit of truth, which is religious faith, how do we reach them? Is there any hope of turning this situation around and getting people to address truth?
So, Bill, I recently wrote a book to address that exact question, and I don't want to just insert in, you know, I've got a book,
yeah.
I wrote it during a time where I was going through a journey with cancer, and I thought it might be the last book I ever get to write. And I thought, this is what I have to address. I have to be able to show people that people of faith in times of great crisis in world history are the ones who turned things around. They did that in science and in the arts and in education, justice, even areas like politics where there's so much division. They were the ones who turned things around and gave us religious freedom, economic freedom, and political freedom. So I do think there is hope, but I will have to say, just by way of warning, no civilization has ever gotten to the point where the majority of people deny that objective reality exists and survived without backtracking on that and finding some source for truth. And like you mentioned, religious faith is really the key. Why? Because as Augustine pointed out in City of God, if you have people whose highest belief is in themselves, then what's the highest authority? Well, it would be the state. Well, what if the state is wrong? What if it's a communist or a Nazi government? Who holds them accountable if the state is the highest form of moral authority? And Augustine was simply pointing out that it's people of faith who make the difference, people who are not only part of the city of man, but part of the city of God, because they have a higher allegiance and then as a result can hold the government accountable when they do things that are morally wrong. If you lose all of that, you wouldn't even know the difference between good and evil. Hannah Arendt, who's the one who covered the Adolf Eichmann trial, remember that guy
right,
in the 1960s?
Right.
He was a Nazi war criminal, and he got caught in South America. They took him to Israel to put him on trial. Ultimately, he was pronounced as guilty, and he was executed. But Hannah Arendt, who was a journalist who covered that trial, said, the people who are most susceptible to totalitarianism are not the committed Nazis, the committed communists, but the people who no longer can distinguish between good or evil or even truth or untruth.
What are the practical implications of this for pastors? How can priests and ministers and rabbis reach out to people and get them to revisit the whole concept of truth and reality?
You know, I think, Bill, for priests and pastors, anyone who is in a position to spiritually influence young people, you've got to have a conversation. You've got to start by saying, all right, Pilate was trying Jesus, asked, what is truth? How do you answer that question? How do you grapple with it? And then be willing to push back if they say, well, I don't know, I guess I decide my own truth for myself. One way to push back is just to draw the relationship between scientific truths, historical truths, and moral truths. So, for instance, if I were to say water boils at 212 degrees Fahrenheit at sea level, it would be reasonable for a person to say, well, it depends on atmospheric conditions. But it wouldn't be reasonable for a person to say, well, that's your truth. You know, that's your opinion. You keep your opinion to yourself, right? That would be a silly response. Similarly, we have historical truths. So if I were to say Martin Luther King was shot on April 4th, 1968, it would not be reasonable for someone to say, well, in your culture, maybe that's true, but in my culture, it's different. Because we know there are scientific facts, there are historical facts. But Bill, there are also moral facts. Here's a thought experiment I give to my students at Summit Ministries when they come out here to study in our two-week programs. I say, I'm going to give you two statements, and you tell me if there's a difference between these two. Statement A, it is always good to care for abandoned puppies. Statement B, it is always good to torture abandoned puppies. And my students will say, yes, of course there's a difference between those. Well, how do you know? If you are the one who decides what words mean, then only you can decide that there's a difference for yourself. If you see someone else torturing a puppy, and you have no right to intervene, they're just living their truth. They're speaking their truth. So then you take that on to all kinds of other issues, like justice. You know, is justice a real thing, or is it just our opinion?
Right. There has to be some sort of objective standard outside of ourselves in order for there to be reality.
If you're on the ocean sailing and your navigation system goes out and you've been well trained, you can look for the North Star and you can navigate. But if you don't have that, if you just try to feel your way across the ocean, you're not going to arrive at your destination or any destination. And the same is true if you're using a compass. It points magnetic north. Is it perfectly true north? No, it isn't. But it's close enough that when you're navigating any place, you can figure out where to go. And that's the idea. Not that everybody can know truth exhaustively, but that we can know truth truly. And so I would encourage everybody in a pastoral position to be ready to have that conversation. If my book could be helpful, it's called Truth Changes Everything, then I'd welcome. I've got stories of great Catholics and Protestants who believe that Jesus is the truth, and they change the course of history. And I guess, Bill, that's just the unique contribution of Christianity, is the truth exists, and it's not just a set of logical propositions. It's a person. It's Jesus.
Where is the book available?
You can get that book anywhere people buy books. A lot of people are going to Amazon, which I kind of like because they keep rankings, which help us get the word out to more people. So if you're concerned about truth and you are interested in finding some hope and hearing stories of people in the past, just like us, everyday people who had all of their quirks and all of their flaws, who still changed the world, then I'd encourage people to check it out.
Jeff Myers of Summit Ministries, thank you very much for speaking with us about this, and good luck with the book. This is probably the pivotal question of our time. What is truth? It's ancient and ever new.
That's exactly right. And Bill, thank you. Thanks for your show, and thank you for being a champion for truth.
One of the most common atheist complaints about faith is that science and religion are incompatible. This isn't true, of course. Some of the greatest scientific thinkers and technical innovators have been believers, even clergymen. Nevertheless, the claim that Christians reject science is a very persistent idea. Consequently, the academic world has tended to divide along faith lines. In most colleges and universities, there's a sharp separation between the STEM departments, that is to say, the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics programs, and any courses that touch on religion or moral tradition. Well, some people of faith are trying to change that. They're organizing a new institution in California, the Catholic Polytechnic University, which promotes science study in light of the enduring truths of the Catholic faith. My guest is Jennifer Nolan, who is the founding president of Catholic Polytechnic. Dr. Nolan, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Bill.
Give us some background, if you would. How did this effort get started?
Well, it was more born out of a need than anything else. I was a Catholic homeschooler for 10 years, and as I pursued that path, I realized that some of our kids, had a strong tendency toward science, which is my background. Some wanted to be engineers, and so looking around at colleges, I thought, where are they going to go? Catholics have done liberal arts universities so well over generations. I mean, the forefront of all of the top thought has come from some wonderful Catholic liberal arts institutions. But as I looked further, I realized that there really isn't a focused university on science, technology, engineering, and math that also is deeply Catholic. So locally, we were looking at different universities and realized, okay, our kids have two options, which would be to either go to a local secular university that does focus on the STEM degrees, but they could be easily talked out of their faith by a smooth-talking atheistic professor, or they could go to a liberal arts university that's Catholic, that may not have that intense focus. And when I'm talking about an intense focus on science and technology, I'm talking about like an interdisciplinary approach where you combine the sciences with the technologies, with humanities, with math, and with business, and then the sparks fly because people are really thinking about it in a multifaceted way. That's when you get a lot of wonderful innovation and wonderful collaborations. I think our country needs this. I think our children need this. I think our church needs this. And so Catholic Polytechnic University was really a need that I think a lot of our families are looking for.
The word university suggests a lot. One thinks of a sprawling campus and multi-million dollar buildings and that sort of stuff. Where are you now in your development?
We are in the process of obtaining licensing through the state of California to be a university, and that's a very long, involved, detailed process. We are going back and forth with the Bureau of Private Postsecondary Education, and we have an application submitted to them that was bigger than my PhD dissertation. It's we have 70 syllabi already developed, and this would be for degree programs BS and MS in computer science. If all goes well, we hope to open up in fall of 2023, but that's really dependent upon the licensing process. But we do have all of our professors hired. We have a campus on loan to us, so we have a facilities use agreement in place with a local boys' Catholic high school that is a science and tech high school called Bosco Tech in Rosemead, California. And we are looking also at permanent campuses as well. Everything's ready to go. We're looking for donors, and we're pursuing licensing.
It's really a kind of a chicken and egg situation in a way. You've got to put all the pieces together before you can get students, but you've got to have students in the pipeline or you won't be able to open up. How are you approaching the recruiting process? What are you able to promise young people who might be interested?
That's the trick. We're not allowed to market it at all until we have our license in place. But I can go on podcasts. I can tell about the development of it. We just cannot take any applications as of yet. However, we do have a survey on our website that indicates people's different interests in the university. If you're a parent or if you're a potential student or if you are a professor wanting to get involved, you can definitely fill out our survey on our website, www.catholicpolytechnic.org, and get involved that way. And that way, when we do get the licensing, we will send out an immediate e-blast, and we have people poised throughout the country ready to advertise this, and hopefully we'll get a good showing our first year, aiming for between 10 to 50 students.
What kind of science specialties will you be offering? Will it be all electronics? Will there be any bioscience?
Yeah, so down the line, all of it. With the state of California's licensing, we are under certain constraints, so we're only allowed to open up with 2 degrees, and one has to be a post-baccalaureate degree. So we have a master's degree in computer science in order to call ourselves a university. We will be opening other degree programs in different sciences, but we hope to have them all eventually. It's just we have to start somewhere, so we're starting off with computer science, which is where a lot of our core team is focused. That's the emphasis right now. However, the next step will probably be something like bioscience so that we can combine biotechnology together and also teach students ethics along these lines too. I don't believe that there is a tech ethics core that's been developed yet, and yet that's one of the first things we are planning on doing is developing a technology ethics course to teach students, okay, what are the ramifications of what you're doing in the moral sphere and according to church teaching as well.
Yeah, that's an area that really strikes me as essential and at the present time rather missing. You know, we're looking at things like artificial intelligence. What are the ramifications of these brilliant robots that we're creating? We're looking at, in the pro-life area, all of the biosciences that have created incredible pressures in medicine. There's an area in which you could really strike a very unique stance and make a real impact.
And we do have a lot of input from bioethicists who are Catholic, National Catholic Bioethics Center has given us some feedback. So we would work with them also to develop a tech ethics foundation. What's nice, though, is that we have this amazing team of scientists and engineers from across the country. Not only are they devout Catholics, but they're also from the top universities, the top corporations. We have people who have taught at MIT, Stanford, USC, ISI, NASA. We have several NASA people because JPL is in our backyard, practically. And we have current and former military, too. We've got a commander in the Navy. We've got a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. We've got a brigadier general who's on our board, who's also a priest. So it's coming together quite well. And we're also trying to develop a new model of university funding that involves corporate partnerships. We have a situation where we have very little tuition, ideally even free tuition, which, you know, I'm not promising this because it all has to come together in a perfect world. But if we had a very low tuition model, we could potentially get 500 to 1,000 applicants. We would pick the top 50 to 100. So we would have the very top students, not based on their ability to pay or their family's ability to pay, but basically based on their ability alone and their devotion to God. And then we can give them hands-on learning with these corporations. The corporations would get top students, top interns, and top, first pick at offering these people jobs. And we would be financially sustainable as a university in the long run. So less reliant on philanthropy and more reliant on corporate partnerships. Again, it's not a promise. It's something that we are striving for at this point.
I had a unique experience that's kind of related to this situation. I attended a community college, and it was a brand new school. It was opened by the county I was living in when I was a kid, and it was very exciting to see all of the pieces come together. But there was an iffy aspect of it, and that was that the school had to make an arrangement to make sure that after we had completed our 2 years, our education could continue. They did put that together, where I eventually went to a state university and got my degree. But I would imagine that new students at a new school might have some reservations about what exactly they're getting themselves into. Can you really assure prospective students that they'll be able to complete their education?
What you're really talking about is accreditation.
Yeah.
An accrediting body will put their stamp on it and say, yes, these are equivalent units to any other university and they can transfer. The difficulty with accreditation is it's a catch-22, so you have to have actual students graduate before you can get accredited.
Right.
But that's what I believe that this licensing process really does prepare us for, is eventual accreditation. And once accreditation is in place, then it is retroactive that all degrees generated from this university are then accredited degrees. So yes, there's going to be some element of risk for the students. There are going to be blips and difficulties that need to be worked out. But if tuition is very low, it may be something that some people would be willing to overlook. But here's the other thing. This university is being formed on four pillars. Science and technology degrees, number one pillar. Number two, academic freedom. So there's not going to be cancellations of people just because they disagree with somebody. No, we're going to be open to academic discourse. Number three, deep faithful Catholicism. We're going to have masses on campus. We're going to have adoration. We're going to have hopefully a religious order on campus. That's to be determined. but the professors are going to be deeply Catholic. And so you're going to see these professional experts kneeling in mass, kneeling in adoration on a semi-regular basis, and that's going to speak volumes to the students. And then the fourth pillar is American patriotism. We want to show our students how wonderful America is and to build up our country instead of tear it down. So with these four pillars, I've been told by many people that this is a very attractive university to a lot of people. The students are going to get top-level science and tech degrees, and we are going to be able to send our students out two by two. This is the new discipleship, sending them out two by two, speaking the tongues of STEM into the world, and to be able to articulate the faith, to be able to do business, to be able to manage, you know, their tech and science degrees. The whole vision, from what I have gleaned from anyone I talk to, has been very positive. It's very positively received. It is all coming together. Any project that the Holy Spirit is infused with, it is coming together in amazing ways.
Well, it is in God's hands. There's no doubt about that. You got a lot of pieces to put together if you're going to open your doors by fall of this year. So,
yeah, but like I said, they're already there. Everything's, we have all of our policies in place, all the professors hired at campus. I mean, everything's ready to go. We're limited by the State Licensing Bureau, but that's going along well, too. So,
well, once again, where can people turn for further information about this?
They can go to our website, again, www.catholicpolytechnic.org. I encourage people to fill out our survey. That will get them on our mailing list. And no, we don't send out tons of emails. Just only when we have content to deliver will we send out the information. But that also helps us form what is needed, what the country needs, what our church needs. The more input that we get from you folks, the better off that we can formulate something that's going to be fitting the needs of many, many different people.
Dr. Jennifer Nolan, President and Founder of Catholic Polytechnic University, thanks very much for talking about this. It's a big, big project, but if you can pull all the pieces together and get the doors open, you could really bring a positive influence into an academic area that is much in need of this kind of Christian leaven. I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you so much, Bill. I'm very excited. And again, it's all the Holy Spirit's project, but it's my discernment says that it's going to happen because everything I've needed so far has almost walked up to me. I'm sure it will manifest in time. And I thank you so much for the opportunity to tell people about it and to spread the word.
Be with us next time when we explore other aspects of religious communication and look deeper into the great Christian heritage of free expression. Free Expression with Bill Castle is a production of Good Shepherd Catholic Radio and Company Publications, where good books, good music, and good radio are always good company. Dan Kuras provided technical assistance. Theme and incidental music are by Dan Adam. The program was produced and directed by Bill Castle. This is Good Shepherd Catholic Radio.